The beauty of it also is people don't appreciate the talent they have. Your talent is worth 20,000. But then at the point where you get another, when you get 200,000, you even start appreciating yourself more.
Mm-hmm.
You start learning and loving your craft more.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then once that craft becomes something, you're like, oh.
How you guys doing, Chinema Magic family? It's your host, Mark Karaki, and we are back. I know it's been a while. Right now, we're on video. A lot of changes since we were regularly filming the podcast, or at least recording the podcast. Excited to be back. We are here in our studio at Launchpad, and we are on the road again, and we'll be looking to film the podcast on a regular basis going forward. We have an amazing guest of light, lineup of guests for you this year. We moved into Launchpad, which is our co-working campus at Impact Africa Network, and we host a bunch of our startups here. We moved into Launchpad in May of last year, 2023. And 2023 was a busy year. Moving from work from home to work in office, and Launchpad is kind of where we reside. We're on 29 Westlands Avenue. So if you're in the area, you should stop by and check us out. We love it here. It's we believe it is the best place to work in the city. We're biased, but so that's where our studio is here at Chinyamaji. We are hosted here and we live here and we operate from here. And so great to be back. Today I am excited to be hosting somebody who I consider to be Marvin and I have met before. In a different capacity, pretty much around the same topic of startup and venture building. But Marvin Tumbo, CEO and co-founder at Scale. I'd heard about him before I met him the first time. And, you represent for me what I would call the genuine article in terms of people who are doing things for the right reasons, in the right way. So Marvin Tumbo is founder and CEO at Scale, a B2B e-procurement platform, connecting buyers with pre-vetted suppliers. Now that pre-vetted thing is so important in terms of...
We're in Kenya.
In Kenya, right? Yeah, so welcome to the podcast, Marvin.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for taking the time. So before we even proceed, what is Scale? What problem are you guys solving? What's that about?
We have another company called Socialite Media, not this light, not the other Socialite, and it's a digital agency. And what we did with that is that we used to apply for a lot of government tenders. And there is a time I remember myself and two of my other co-founders. We sat at the office, took us 14 days. We printed, I think, close to 5,000, 6,000 documents. And on the last day, we slept at the office, and we had to submit a bid. And by 10 o'clock, at 5 a.m., we were in town. We had to bind the document. We had someone to paginate it. Like, we had to call a guy to actually... there is a tool for paginating documents. And we're like, this is nonsense. And someone, you have to take the document to be notarized by a lawyer. And you're sitting there and we're like, there has to be a better way to do this.
Wow. Yeah.
There has to be a better way to do this. And here's the thing. The stupidity of it all is that one document was probably 1,500 pages.
Yeah. When you say one document, you mean...
Like the one tender.
One tender.
Submission.
Right.
And you have to do it in two copies, and then you have to keep your own copy just in case someone grabbed some few pages to make sure that you don't... Now, that's exactly what you have to deal with in procurement. And you're like, okay, fine. Now we've done three copies. We are 30,000 shillings deep. To respond to one bid, 14 days where you haven't done anything else except prepare for this bid, and then you lose it.
Wow.
And I remember we left at 10 a.m. We went to a bar. We're having our beers, and you just like, look, there has to be a better way to do this. And I'm like, how many suppliers do this? And how much does it cost them? And then what's the opportunity cost to this? And you're like, if we can make it simpler for suppliers to actually respond to bids, we should. And we did. Fantastic. That's our journey.
Very cool. I mean, solving your own problem fundamentally doesn't
you,
get
you exactly
doesn't get more authentic and genuine than that, right?
It was too much. Right. We suffered too much actually when it came to responding to bids, and you're like, we cannot exist in this sort of environment where it costs you more to find opportunities.
Right. Because you're, and the bidding thing is, you're definitely not guaranteed.
What's
the success rate in that game? Of course, it depends on I don't even know what it depends on. It depends on who you know, right? Because those things are gamed up at the end of the day. So
actually, here's the other thing also that I felt was critical for us and why we needed to do this is when you talk to young, to small, to emerging companies. There is always this perception that this is a game, yeah? That there are people who have always been set aside to actually win all these contracts.
Yeah.
So if the mentality is that this is something is rigged, what does it do? It prevents you from actually entering the game.
Right. So it actually...
you exclude yourself.
Right, and pushes it more in the rigged direction even.
Precisely.
Right? Because the alternatives are fewer.
You remove yourself. Actually, it feels like a choice where you remove yourself from accessing these opportunities, and you're like, okay, no, I think this is rigged, so I'm not gonna take part in it. Right. And then now, who wins? The people who are in the system already.
Right. Interesting. So what is scale in just technical terms? What is it that you guys do? You've described your journey there, but what is it that you guys? What problem are you solving? You in just simple words.
Yeah.
You do this. This is what it is, right? And who should use you?
So what Scale is a B2B e-procurement solution. And what we've done is that we've digitized procurement from the two common set of procurement stakeholders. Those are buyers and suppliers. So on the buyer side, you're able to do everything when it comes to procurement. So internal requisition, to be able to posting bids, to evaluate the bids, to negotiate the bids, to issue purchase orders and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
On the supplier side as well, you are able to respond to these bids seamlessly, where you don't have to print anything and all that. But then also, there is an entire document management system from both sides. So at any one point where it would take you 2 weeks to actually respond to a bid,
mm-hmm.
with our platform, it can take you 2 minutes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What would you have to... Okay, so I guess... When you respond to a bid, because those 1,000 pages,
yes,
that doesn't sound like 2 minutes even in a digital situation.
Mm.
How does it reduce something that seems quite massive into 2 minutes?
One, because from a document management point of view, it means a lot of these documents that people ask you for, they are repetitive.
Got it. You already have them.
You already have them in your system. And
so you don't have to print them and
you don't have them. Exactly.
Got it.
You don't have to. And then also, beyond that, actually, is that when it comes to if they're expiring, tax compliance expires every year.
Mm.
Yeah, business money expires every year.
Mm.
So we tell you as a supplier that your document is actually expiring this particular year. We tell the buyers as well that from a compliance level, these suppliers are not compliant when it comes to this particular documentation.
Mm.
So there's almost like a level of perennial pre-qualification where you are able to see at what level can you deal with this particular supplier. So the documents are stored. Mm. But then beyond that, it's... Let me ask you, for instance, you use Uber, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So at any one point, when you're talking about Uber, think about Uber in a similar sense you think about suppliers. So that now, if that driver has worked with other people as a supplier and they have a rating as a driver also, and in this regard as a supplier, that rating is carried forward.
Mm-hmm.
So now from a due diligence point of view, I can be able to say that this particular supplier is actually worth my time.
Right.
Because I can see who they've worked with before.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it means something, and they are rated as this. These are the costs. They actually have the capacity to fulfill whatever orders I have done.
They have a track record.
They have a track record.
I got to tell you, man, like when you and I met and we were talking about, you know, potentially investing in scale, yeah. And this is a pain that I have experienced and a lot of people experience. Mm. You know, vetting vendors,
yes.
Right? We live in a society where it's very interesting. The way I interpret it is people overpromise and underdeliver as a way of doing business, yes. As a business model.
Yes.
It is the craziest thing, right? It's like eat what you kill mentality. So you don't compound your brand, right?
Yes.
I'm going to sell you this thing. This I can deliver this. Mm. Then I'm going to undersell so I make a margin. It's the craziest thing.
It's stupid.
Right? So what you do, I think, is so important and so timely and so relevant in our market. We can dive into it a little bit more down as we proceed. But let's take a step back and get to know you a little bit more. Your background, education, and your path to your career path. So tell us about that.
I hate school.
You hate school or you hated school?
Still do.
You still do hate school?
The amount of fees I'm paying. I don't like it.
Yeah.
But I was born in Nakuru, and it's not the nicest place to be. It's sandy as F. And I went to high school in Nakuru as well. But then my high school experience actually was much better than my university experience. Mm. I went to university in Egerton, which is in Nakuru as well, which is
You love Nakuru, kid.
No. My parents did. They did not move us around. It was not out of choice. It's where I was actually selected to go to Egerton University.
How did you feel when you realized you're going there? Did you feel like, oh man, I need to get out of here? Another 4 years.
It's not really. Because given where I've come from, given my history, our parents and all that, just making it there was a win.
Big deal.
And I was happy about that I'm the first one to go to uni. And
so you didn't, you didn't mind too much about the location geographically?
Not until later. Until when I realized when there are better universities. I'm like, I was happy. But then I was called in to do Bachelor of Education, which I changed immediately. I joined uni because I saw an article about economics. So I joined to do economics and sociology.
Mm.
Although I was called in to do bachelor's, to do a Bachelor of Education. And I figured I was not a good teacher.
Yeah.
No.
You hated school.
I think I am actually for different reasons. Because
not in a school context, maybe?
Probably because I hated school.
Yeah.
Because I think there are better ways to teach. And my realization is this. And I'm very good with my hands. So I did metal work in high school.
Mm.
And like right now, you tell me to build anything with metal, I can.
Mm.
That's
I did
craft.
Metal too, but I can't build it. I was just trying to get by.
Yeah. I was so good at metal work.
Yeah.
I used to help other students, yeah, with their projects and all that. And the teacher would tell me, go help that one. Like
So why did you go down that path?
In high school?
No, after.
No,
university. You have to go for the white collar path.
Yes.
That was the clear.
And then that's the problem also, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is that...
that's interesting because you were good at it, but you dare not go down that path.
You can't.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it's always been my fallback plan. I said, if I could not do anything else, at least I can build something in my hands.
Yeah.
And not many people actually have that, in that from a skill set point of view. Which is why, even for me, I appreciate so many, when it comes to TVETs.
Artisans and stuff, yeah.
It's work with your hand.
Mm. Mm.
You can build something. Yeah.
Interesting. So do you do it at all just for your own kind of private passion? Have you built anything?
No, I plan to. Once you invest in us and then... and then we exit with $1 billion. But I am not going to have a house without a setup.
Stuff you have.
Where I can build. And it's... Right now, it's just a time component and everything else, and also about the resources.
Right.
But if you look even at what I watch on YouTube, it's just restoration mechanics and all this. Because this is why I hate even. And I tell you, I enjoyed my high school more than university. Is I was in third year. One of my roommates was studying for exams. And I look at his book and I'm like... is that a lathing machine? Because they had drawn it. And I'm like, if you're in university and you're in third year and you're drawing the lathing machine how it should look like, you have a problem. Because I know how to use a lathing machine. I have worked with lathing machines my entire high school. I built, like, you give me pieces of metal, I'll combine it and create something and then say, this is it. But then we are in third year in university and then this guy... And then I was like, I skipped all my classes. I went to the engineering class, and then I found the lathing machine. And I'm like, it doesn't work. And none of our engineering students
had used it. Sad.
And
the theory of it all, eh?
It's theory for something I did in high school.
Interesting. Yeah. So wow, I mean, so these guys, did they come, were any of them accidentally metalwork people, or was it just random? Because it's like...
Universities in Kenya are random.
It's just random.
It's
luck of the draw.
It's people, like, for some reason, actually, I'm wondering even who you do what you're called to do. As opposed to what you intend to do or want to do,
yeah. For that, but at least you had the opportunity to change to econ.
And that's the thing is how many people realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How many?
Most don't.
For me, it was an article that I read on the weekend before I was supposed to join uni.
Amazing. Yeah. Do you remember what the gist of the article was? Well.
They were talking about economics and then that if you enter it as a field. The world is open for you. You can literally do anything.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I'm going to be a teacher?
And the world is closed.
Exactly. That was it.
That was it. Okay, yeah. Fantastic. So, you know, what was
your first... I'm a better teacher now.
You're a better teacher now?
Yes.
What do you teach? Procurement. No.
No, I think what I've learned is I'm patient, one.
But you know, I think... teaching is inevitable for people who, for people who have something meaningful to say. You can't but not teach if you're good at something and you have something meaningful to say. I think teaching is just part of life.
No, right? But to teach, you have to care.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, you have to have very ulterior motives also, right?
Teaching is a giving.
Ideally.
Yeah.
Ideally.
It has to.
Although there are some people who end up teaching, but they don't care.
Because and there's always
it's just
also.
A job.
Yeah. But then, and I think from a feeling point of view, if you feel you want to teach, you must care
right.
At a very, yeah. At the very core. When it's a feeling.
Right. You know, the other thing too is. Well, there's I have a very strange relationship with the idea that I can teach anyone anything. I always feel like, imposter syndrome, right?
Mm.
Who are you to teach somebody something?
Yeah.
But you know, sometimes you just find it's inevitable, right? Because obviously you have to care, and also you realize people need help at the end of the day. So, but yeah, let's talk about your career path and how you ended up. Going down the entrepreneurship path. So you wanted to study econ, open up, you know, the aperture of opportunity for yourself.
Yeah.
What was your path to entrepreneurship? Is that the first thing you ended up? Did you have a job first? Were you employed? Mm. How did you, what was your career path like?
My career path is based on arrogance. Mm. Yeah.
It's,
I remember going back to, I was going to pick my certificates from uni, which I had some trouble picking because my dean was an idiot. And
you don't hold back, clearly.
No, he was. And he told me I don't know to go to what office to do this and that. And I remember walking out of his office and I told him, the one thing I'm not going to do is come back to this school, to this university. Yeah? And I'm going to make it and you're going to hear about me. And I've never gone back. I haven't taken my degree yet. It's still there. And but then also, when I said I loved my high school more than I did uni, is because...
Which high school was it, by the way?
Nakuru High School.
Nakuru, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a good school.
Yeah.
Is this still a good school? A lot of the schools were good before.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's still a good school. Mm. But then back then it was. We had a wonderful principal who gave us a hard time, but it was out of love
right.
more than anything else. Like, I remember we went for his burial, like almost everyone. Wow. But I know after school we actually did go for his burial because he beat us, man. But it was out of love.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's a good school. But then when I left uni, I applied for one job, and that one job was to Safaricom. And they...
Why? Were you just...
Parents.
Were you just... Okay, your parents encouraged you. So
not encouraged.
Required.
You need a job. Like, why have we done all of this to...
Get out there.
To get out there. But then,
yeah.
But then, of course, anyone wants to work for Safaricom back then. 20 late, it's 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
Safaricom is the biggest company. You want to work there. And so I applied for a job and I didn't even get an interview. But then the beauty of it actually, and it's how funny life is actually, is I didn't like my lecturers much in campus. So what I did was I was writing a blog, and my blog was just insulting every theory I learned about in class. So I would go and then I would say, "This is why this is shit." And class, computer science, I'm writing and insulting all my lecturers. And then at one point, I was learning about international humanitarian law. And I went and wrote about it again on a blog. And then what happens? Amnesty International calls me. They're like, would you mind writing for us? Like, okay, I do this after class because I'm bored, but why not? So I started writing. And then one of the people I met through that said that they do social media. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And... like I help companies do social media. So for 3 months, because I like writing, I started writing articles saying, how do you use social media for the PR industry? How do you use social media for marketing? How do you use social media in banking? How do you use social media in... And I was writing an article maybe every 2 days.
So this person was telling you, because those are varied industries, social media is emerging. Mm. Were they telling you what to write?
He told me that that's the job he does. And I'm like, people pay you for this? And he's like, yes. And I'm like, okay, cool. I spend time researching, but when I'm researching, I'm writing.
Got it.
So within 3 months, I've written probably 60, 70 articles. I created a blog.
That's prolific.
Man, I write. I'm stupid at writing.
Mm.
Like, stupid good. But within 3 months, I have my blog. I'm writing every 2 or 3 days. An article is out. And then also, just to cover the basics, I'm writing procurement for this industry. So at, in any case you're looking at what to do, not procurement, social media for.
Right.
In any case you're looking for how to utilize social media for whatever industry you're in, you'll find me.
Mm.
Actually, for the next probably 6-7 years, if you search for social media in Kenya, you'll find my blog.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting. Mm.
And so 3 months in, I get a call and like, would you want to teach this? I'm in Botswana.
Teaching?
So training people.
Interesting. So who called you?
People. Like, and then that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Is that when people are looking for these solutions, I was training guys in Botswana, human rights guys, on how to use social media to disseminate information about.
So just from this blog,
from the blog
process, you started being called for.
I was in Botswana, I was in Nigeria, I was in Mozambique,
and how,
I was in
South Africa. And this is just right after campus?
That was 3 months after I left campus.
Amazing.
And
wow.
And then now for the next year, I'm doing all the talks here in Nairobi. But then also, and it's weird because that's how I first actually traveled out of the country.
Right.
It was someone paying me. And I'm like,
this is amazing.
Exactly. And then there's this gentleman. I love this guy. It's called Mark. Mark Stephenson. He runs a company called, what do you call it? He has a leather company, Sandstorm.
The
bags.
The bags, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Lifestyle brand, kind of. Yes. Yeah.
He wrote to me just via the comment section, and he told me, you write extremely well. That's the only reason I'm reaching out.
Interesting, yeah.
And I remember he paid me my first 200,000 shillings. And
to write what? Or no, to do what?
Just to help with. Whatever I was selling with digital media, he's like, I need that help.
Mm-hmm.
So come in, paid me 200,000, allowed me to move houses.
Wow.
For the first time from my dad's place. Because I was staying in Nakuru.
Right.
I came here to do jobs, odd jobs, but I was living in my dad's house.
Yeah.
And then when he gave me the first 200,000, I moved houses, never looked back.
Amazing.
And but then, as I was doing that for him, I had moved houses and all that. Again, my blogs, I had written about social media and politics. And then I get a call of someone saying, hey, would you like to work in the presidential campaign?
Okay.
And then I ended up being
how far out of uni are you at this point?
A year and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
This just goes to show the power of the times in which we live in, the power of the internet, right? Because this is the first decade of the millennium.
Yes.
And the internet is brand new.
Yes.
And it takes a young person from Nakuru, right, to Botswana running a presidential campaign.
I'm still shocked.
of what the internet has been able, what it is.
My parents are still shocked.
It's amazing because people are used to a world that stayed the same,
yes,
and that basically it was get in line, right, and wait your turn.
Yes.
But here you are soaring because you had this latent ability to write and connect with the world. I still, that's just...
I don't know why I'm here today. Like, I can't comprehend it, yeah? In terms of... And yesterday we had our first procurement get-together meetup. And one of the things that the procurement guys were telling us is that no one appreciates us. Yeah?
Procurement guys.
No one cares for us.
They're like, procurement is one of those things where it's, I can see it totally.
But then, and I remember, like, again, it took me back to when I was starting,
right,
is that what do you have to say for you? Yeah? What do you have to say for your industry? What value in terms of just explaining to people?
Right.
Yeah.
What you do and why it matters.
What you do and why it matters.
And why they should care.
It's key. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the caring might or might not happen. But
at least they'll understand you.
But then they'll understand.
They'll not convert you as a problem.
Exactly. And it's for me, and which is why like getting into politics was one. Yeah. Like I'm really good at politics.
So let's go there. Because yes. This is interesting. So you get called for a presidential campaign. Tell us more. Where, who?
I got a call from a guy. What's his name? I got a call. And so I went and met them. And they asked me.
Which presidential campaign?
Uhuru. Okay. Kenyatta 2013.
Okay.
But this was 2010.
Okay.
So I got a call from this guy. It's like, we've been asked to find people and we think you're the best when it comes to social media. But then I'm the best in social media because of what I've written about social media.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. I'm a trained economist.
Right.
I'm a sociologist. Yeah. But I'm not a tech guy whatsoever. My first blog I Googled and I built my first website just from Googling.
Mm.
And so this is not my area of expertise per se. But then my thinking, again, economics, going back to it, is I can think how to make this a thing.
Right.
So I've been training, I've been doing this, and then when they call me, they're like, okay, would you write a strategy? If you are to write a strategy for a presidential campaign, can you write one? It's like, yeah.
So let me ask you this.
Yes.
This is interesting. So you get a call. Then what they tell you, this is, we're calling you about a presidential campaign.
Yeah.
And then where do you go meet them? What happens next?
So this was weird. So I get a call and then again I don't meet first, and then I write a strategy. I think those.
Oh, they just asked you to write the strategy over the phone. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So I write 4 pages and then after that I go and meet this lady at our office near the president's near State House. And after that, I get a call from the current governor, Sakaja. So he's a governor now, but he gives me a call. It's like, let's meet. We meet at Hurlingham. It's like, okay, so we love the strategy. We love this and we love this. Let's do more.
Mm.
And then the next thing, gives me a call. He used to drive this old Mercedes, green one. Let's go. We have to go meet someone. We go meet Jomo. Jomo was a PA to the to Uhuru Kenyatta. So we go to Jomo's house in Muthaiga. And that was it. The next thing we know, we are at Norfolk interviewing employees who are to come. I remember calling my friend Samuel. And telling him, hey, we are starting a campaign for the president and whatnot. Samuel was a guy who used to get 39 out of 40 in English, in composition.
Mm.
So I call him and I'm like, hey, would you want to work?
Mm.
And Samuel,
do you want to work?
Do you want to work? And he's like, yeah, I'm actually doing a job in Nanyuki. And I'm like, I have a job here for you. Mm. It's going to pay, I don't know, 75, 80K or whatever.
Which was something back then.
Yeah, it was something.
Yeah.
And he was earning 10K, he told me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I told him, hey, if you can give your notice and then you can come down in a month, the next day at midday, it's like, I'm here.
Okay, no waste time.
Samuel actually has worked for Uhuru Kenyatta, has been in the presidency in State House for the last 10, 12 years. Nice. Already all the people that we hired, that we worked with already, they are permanent and pensionable in government at the moment. But then that was how he started. It was just a call with Sakaja, met with this. And then now we were setting up a campaign unit in Lavington. And we have all these young people. The speechwriter we had was 19.
What?
Yeah. Brilliant lady.
Amazing. Amazing. She was awesome. I feel like this is another podcast that we need to get. It's very interesting. But let's jump into, so is that what led to the agency Social Light?
Social Light actually started before that.
Okay.
It's it was almost like just taking some time off to run this. But then in the interim, socially it was actually working as well. I would take time off and travel to Botswana, Ghana, or whatever to do.
So social like media was the agency you started?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so it started just based somebody calling you and saying, can you do this for us?
And interesting, though.
Yeah.
When I joined the campaign, again, I'm not a technical person. Yeah. I think more than I can code. I can't. Coding was, I only built one or two websites based on what I Googled. But then when it came to the campaign, I went and asked a friend of mine whether I could hire him to build the presidential websites, the campaign websites, the party, political party websites there. And when I did that, he said no. But then at the back of it, people who are listening to it, they're like, oh, look, they went and asked him, but then can we do it on the side? Because his two employees are my co-founders.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you approached somebody who had
he said he didn't want to do
development
political.
Shop.
Yes.
Right? Software development.
Yes.
Building websites.
Yes.
And he said no, why?
He said he didn't want to deal with politics.
Yes.
And then, but then his two employees at the time.
They overheard the conversation and they were like,
yes,
my man.
They came and, which is interesting as well. And for me, when you're talking about I like just being genuine, being honest.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
These, when I met them, they asked me, they told me, yeah, we can do the job.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then when I asked them, how much will it cost? They told me 60,000. I was like, are you serious?
Mm. Was that like, oh my God, no, this is so cheap? Or?
Exactly. So when I asked them, are you serious? They went down to 40K. Do you know what I did?
Yeah.
I told them, I'm going to give you 200.
Okay. You're a good guy. You're one of the good guys. How do they respond to that?
They were shocked. They were shocked. And then also...
They probably didn't believe it.
No, they didn't.
They thought they heard you wrong, I'm sure.
And it's only later they told me their monthly salary at the time was 20K.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Now you have 200. And then after that, I remember another job, another 200K.
For the same campaign or other things?
Still the same campaign, but then there are projects within the campaign.
Got it.
But then the beauty of it, and which is why I think we are such a unique team and why we are so close, is that
you know
where we are coming from.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not going to F you up.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Even for my own gain. It's like, look, if this is it, like I could have eaten the 140K.
Right.
Easy.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But then they trust me enough. I trust them enough because we've come such a long way.
Right.
And the beauty of it also is people don't appreciate the talent they have.
Mm.
Yeah?
Mm.
So at that point, your talent is worth 20,000. But then at the point where you get when you get 200,000, you even start appreciating yourself more.
Mm-hmm.
You start learning and loving your craft more.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And then once that craft becomes something, you're like, oh. Because I can tell you, immediately after the campaign, these guys were in Safaricom and SBM Bank and whatnot as managers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Almost immediately. But then and I think talent needs to be paid its worth. Yeah. Right now, I can tell you, I think I earn the least in my company.
Mm.
As co-founders, we earn less than our employees.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, that's...
Because...
Yeah.
Exactly.
When we were getting started, I used to pay people and...
and you know it.
And just eat.
Exactly. So,
but this is fantastic. So your co-founders, tell us about them. Their names, I guess... You've told us how you met.
Yeah.
Explain to us who they are and what they do.
So Brian Mungye, and Cormac Maloba. Brian Munge is our COO. Brian has OCD. He needs everything organized in every way possible. It helps, especially someone like me, who I can write for, I can do, I can think and whatnot, but then when it comes to the organization component, it's, you don't have a company without a Brian.
Organization, putting structures in place.
The structures in place, the writing, the contracts, the whatnot, the employee, right. Every other thing that makes a company, Brian structures that. Nice. He is a sober one.
Mm.
In many ways, when it comes to the organization, Cormac is our CTO, and Cormac is brilliant in, I think, every other way. Cormac can code anything, in any way possible, and all that. He is he has a stupid fetish of knowing everything you can ask him, like who died in 1760 kind of questions, and then he has an answer. But then he knows almost everything, so that is fetish. But also when it comes to coding, he's actually brilliant. And we have our designer. So those are two co-founders, Cormac Maloba and Brian Munge.
What's the headcount since you're talking about?
We're six.
Six of you,
right? Oh man, we learn to be lean quick, right. I mean, yeah. We are frugal,
which is important,
and so
you guys, so you go through this aha moment with the procurement nightmare situation, and you decide to start the car, build a solution.
Mm.
When does it become a company or a, what did you do first? Product? How did you get from to the point where you're like, okay, we're going to build a business around this and we're going to commit to this path?
What happened actually was, it's a day we realized there were actually 100,000 companies that already registered on AGPO when they built it for the National Treasury, 2016.
What's that?
Access Garment Procurement Opportunities for the National Treasury.
Oh, so you built something for the government?
Yeah, 2013. Okay. We built the Access to Garment Procurement Opportunities Portal. By the time we were building
was that a tender, or you guys, how did that come about?
Government is weird. Government always doesn't have any budget. So we went to register. So we were appointed actually to positions in government in State House. I was the first one to say I'm not going. Yeah, because
why?
At a point where you say 30% of all government tenders are going to go to youth, women, and persons with disability.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a youth. I'm in my 20s. I want to win tenders.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Why would I work in government?
Interesting.
Yeah. Why would I
get a bigger opportunity?
There is a bigger opportunity in and again, I've never been employed kind of guy.
You're one of the unemployables, yeah.
I've never signed a contract to be employed in my life.
Mm.
Not once. So I was like, I'm not getting employed. Yeah. But then secondly, even if it's in State House, so I turned it down. And I said, if truly you've said 30% of government procurement to go to youth, women, and persons with disabilities, then I should be one of the people who experiences this.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to register as a youth-owned company at the National Treasury.
Mm.
When I got there, found a line, big line, of people waiting from all over the place. And I hate lines. If you look at my ID right now, I've never changed my ID. My ID looks like it has been bombed, it's been burnt and bombed. Like, I just, first day, and then I just maneuvered my way, got myself into the Director for Public Procurement office, and I said, why haven't you digitized this? And she said, we don't have a budget. I'm like, I'm going to do it for free. So I went, talked to Cormac, talked to Brian. He's like, can we digitize this?
Mm.
In a month, the president was launching it.
What?
Yeah.
Amazing.
The president was launching it.
Mm-hmm.
In 4 years, they came back to us and said, you need to re-engineer this. We have to improve it. We have to make it better. We still work on it today. Mm. And now you have 100,000 companies registered from 2000. And after that, they're like, okay, another bit. Now they had to pay us. We made probably, I don't know, 17 million out of it to re-engineer it. Mm. 2016 to whatever, got paid, did it, did the work and all that. Right now you're looking at almost 400,000 businesses on the platform. Amazing. Yeah.
Amazing. So something you volunteered to do turned into the most amazing opportunity.
Yes. But then that's also how we learned there is a problem in procurement.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's how you realize.
You see, the crazy thing is, it's so interesting how this eat what you kill mentality, people have to have, you know, the survival mindset blinds you from what you really can't see, yeah. Right? In terms of people have a linear view on if I do something, I got to get something. Mm. It's a very short-term kind of...
It's extremely.
It's not a compounded... Because life is a mystery. The end of the day.
And it's the giving aspect.
Right. Yeah. People don't believe in that over here.
They don't. Man, right?
Giving what?
They no don't.
Way. Yeah. If you actually do that, people are suspicious about that move in terms of just being kujitolea, right? To just give. And it's something that, you know, a lot of ways is what makes... Because I spent many years in the Bay Area, right? In that ecosystem in Silicon Valley. It's a core tenant in that place.
Yeah.
People have a sense of abundance, yes, and giving and being available, right? Over here, it doesn't work that way, and it blocks and chokes so much opportunity. It's unbelievable. Your example is fascinating.
I'm actually shocked at... Sometimes I just sit and I'm I wonder, like, to what extent, like, why don't you open doors? Yeah? Why don't you let people
gatekeepers.
In? What, the gatekeeping mentality is why it's actually quite difficult to raise from Kenya.
Yeah, listen, I gotta tell you, I look at it I see it as an advantage because, I mean, everything that has come my way has been because I've been open, right? And because people are not that way, you can really kind of separate yourself from the crowd. Yeah. It's a very interesting thing. So you start by giving your time for free, right, to solve a problem.
Yeah.
It leads to all this opportunity, which leads to the company scale that you start kind of building, that you build right now. In terms of just if you could quantify the value of that volunteer situation, could you somehow quantify what you have gotten back?
Strange. So when we started, again, no money, no salary, young company, and so did the job, and we maintained it. Actually, we hosted the platform for 4 years.
Wow. Yeah. And no pay?
No pay whatsoever. No pay from government until when they wanted to re-engineer it. And then from the re-engineering, we got maybe, looking at probably 17 million out of it. But then upfront, everything we had covered up to that particular point. To date, probably it has gone maybe to 20-something million because we still help in managing it. But then it's something we did initially for free. Yeah. But then also, it's not just that. It's by virtue of doing that, we have been able to go to other government departments, because if you've done work with Treasury,
right,
you can do...
Qualified.
Exactly.
You're pre-vetted.
You are pre-vetted. Because again, as a young company that is just coming out and all that, to win a contract is difficult without any prior work. Exactly. Yeah. Mm. But then if you have prior work that has been done via the, and especially with the National Treasury, it means you can actually do anything else.
Right.
And with that, I remember 2016, when you are doing the Treasury work, writing a concept note, which we just ran, I was talking to my co-founders then, and the scale co-founders, but then my partners then, Cormac and Brian, like, you know what we could do for government? Yes, we were watching the spokesperson. They used to do this thing at the beginning of, at the day the president was inaugurated in April or whatever. The ministers would go and say what they've achieved for the past 1 year at the inauguration of whatever, at the dates when the president was inaugurated. And then we're like, you know what, we can do this better. And then wrote a concept note for 8 pages long. That concept note became the President's Delivery Unit portal. Yeah, we went and met with the then Secretary for the President's Delivery Unit, who became the Chief of Staff to the President. Met him, gave him the 8 page. I didn't even read it. He said, "If you whatever you're saying, tell it to me, and then build it." And then within 2 weeks, we built a prototype. Mm. Within 6 months, we had the president, the deputy president, all the ministers, all the assistant ministers, all the development partners launching the President Delivery Unit portal that showcased every government project that was being implemented across the country.
Was it an open system where citizens could log in and...
That was the point, wasn't it?
How come we've never heard of it? I guess maybe I'm.
Have you seen GOK delivers anywhere on the bridges and all that? That was us.
That's okay.
Yes.
Okay. Is it still up?
Yes.
Has it been used?
No. It was up for a minute, but then I'm not sure what they're doing it with it now. Mm. But then for the period that we were handling it, it was you will go to a specific county, your constituency, see all the roads.
Amazing.
Where they were, the level of completion, what was planned, what wasn't, and all of that. But again, it's the same thing also that when it comes to procurement, is until and unless you actually present yourself, until you move forward and say, I want to respond to this bid because I think I can win. I want to. These proposals, like, and here's the thing, the portal, yeah, in Treasury, it was going with an idea and telling someone, I think this can be done. And that actually is a lifeline of our entire company. That is how I met my co-founders.
Right.
It's just by saying, you know what, I think this can be done better. And this is how. And people saying, okay, show us right. Or try it on whatnot is you have to put your foot in the game.
You do, yeah. So scale now comes into the focus, right? Because
you know,
that's kind of where you operate. You operate in this space where, you know, it was the first, you've had that problem twice, right? And then you're like, oh, let's build this portal for the government. And then now, you know, you wanted to kind of solve the problem for everybody else in terms of access to opportunity for folks who want to do business with government, right? Offer their services to government.
Yes.
And so how did you fund the initial phase? I guess because you guys had you were partners, and so you were working together. So scale became a side project in the midst of what you guys were doing?
Yes.
Okay.
So when we, I think 2017... someone sent us an email saying there's an opportunity, like how would you help youth in Kenya when it comes to jobs and employment and all that? And we responded. It was something done by IDEO.org. Okay. It's a global design firm.
Right.
And we responded. They had the project called Amplify Project. So we responded and said, look, this is how we can do it because procurement is where money is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's where money is, we can actually, by enabling these companies to win, like how do we teach? Because at that particular point, actually, there's a report that had come out from the National Treasury saying out of 1.2 trillion shillings set aside for youth, women, and persons with disabilities, they had only won 74 billion.
Wow.
And you're like, but this is what has been set aside for you in its entirety, is 1.2 trillion. And if you're only winning 74 billion, there is a larger problem.
Right.
Yeah. Around procurement that we are not addressing. Mm. And that is education, that's access. Where are the opportunities? How do you have the technical ability to actually respond to bids?
Just to respond, not do the job. Yes. Just respond.
Just to respond.
Yeah.
Just to respond. What's the biggest issue? So initially what we wanted to do was create a platform where we can have procurement people to train any company, that any young people who want to respond to bids, how to. Mm. And then Scale came out, and ID.org, they're brilliant. They helped us with human-centered design thinking, where you talk for the to the people you want to build for before you actually do a line of code.
Right.
So we went and talked to guys, and you're like, you know what? Now, Scale is an educational platform around procurement, but then what you do is you learn by doing, which is a better way to learn.
Right.
Yeah. So we said, okay, we are going to build a platform that actually can allow you to respond to tenders. But then whether it's your 100th time or your first time, you're going to get it right the first time.
Nice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So simplify.
You see, everything is there. If something is wrong, we have a mark, big one, tells you, ah, you have not provided this document. Right. This document has expired, this and this and this and this. So if first time or last time, but then there are so many other benefits to procurement, but especially when it comes to inclusion. When you look at what has happened in Brazil, I think that's where they have the real numbers, where they've actually done the data, is when you say that I'm giving a women-owned business or a youth-owned business or a person with ability-owned business a contract, in Brazil, they're able to establish that 93% of the time that these companies get these contracts, they hire from their ilk.
Right,
yeah?
Right.
Women hire women.
Right.
Youth hire youth.
Mm-hmm.
PWDs hire PWDs. Mm. But then also, 93% of the time as well, they are like, you hire from those who are unemployed, from those who are underemployed.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or those who are not in the formal sectors, when you give an SME a job. Right now, if I say I'm giving a contract to BWC,
you're buttering people who already have it.
Exactly.
Right? So it's wow, that's fantastic. That's fascinating. I never thought about it that way. But it compounds the opportunity.
Precisely.
And bridges the inequality gap.
That's the value of inclusion.
Right.
And what we want to do is actually, even with just data, is like, which companies are winning these contracts and how, what's the multiplier effect of that?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
From a socioeconomic inclusion.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so the other thing we talked about earlier is this idea of, trending towards mediocrity. Yep. Right, where people overpromise and deliver as a business model, and you guys have the opportunity to actually turn that around on its head, where the quality practitioners, vendors, can be surfaced, and have a virtuous cycle, right, where you can actually see people's track record and how they deliver matters. And that will have a compound effect in terms of productivity,
certainly,
value creation, good people finding good people, good companies finding good companies. And, it'll just be fantastic. So what you guys do it's like the same thing like the example you gave of Uber, right? Is the notion that a female, right, can trust to travel by herself at night, and a stranger, right? Of course, it's been a bit shaky in the recent past, right? And unfortunately, but that social like glue or trust capital that comes with ratings, right? And somebody's livelihood tied to their reputation.
Yes,
it is a big deal.
No, and that's precisely it. It's like we. As humans, you operate on trust.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And trust also is a critical currency for trade.
It is.
Yeah.
Trust is currency, man.
Because if
you look at the friction lack of trust causes, is a huge deal.
There is a cost.
There is a significant cost. And I still think there's a lot of room to run around how we can surface trust and reputation online. And the problem right now is still very imperfect, right?
Yes.
Imperfect. So I've hired people. Mm. And, you know, when you work with people, you get all kinds. Majority of the time, the aggregate, the average is not, you know, top tier talent is rare by definition.
Certainly.
It's top 10% for a reason. And I've hired people and I've built people. And because you have a certain expectation, they end up not liking you because you're a mirror to that side of themselves they don't want to deal with, right? And I have built people who have left the organization or we've let them go and they have gone online and written all these negative things, right? And so
it's I'm dealing with one I can't even mention now. Right. But
it's fascinating. But you know what? It's you can't keep a good, I don't know what, the N-word down, right? Mm. At the end of the day, you know, the lower they go, the higher you go. So there's still a downside to this kind of reputation thing online because it can be gamed up, it can be rigged, right?
I'm actually, no, it's... And
here's the interesting thing.
Yeah.
you can have a reputation about organizations, but you can't have reputation about employees, for example.
In there.
That one, in our market specifically, the day we solve for that, or the day the platform starts, you guys are solving it for businesses, which is very important because I've worked with businesses. Whenever I engage a vendor, I expect for them to promise and deliver. I express shitty work. Mm. That's what I expect. So I'm always looking for, you know, how do we vet these vendors?
Yeah.
So it's a problem I deal with directly.
Yeah.
So I love what you're doing in terms of surfacing the best and kind of leveling up the expectations, right? That's a big deal. I think that's a massive opportunity. Trust is a massive opportunity across the continent. But in the individual level, and that's not even people, it's even relationships. It's even people who you can trust just on a social level, right? That their reputation matters.
It's actually curious. You would have loved the chat we had yesterday with procurement professionals. We have now this group that we are setting. We have the podcast that we are creating as well.
Fantastic! I love it. Going community with it.
I think I came up with 10 names. We're calling it Sip and Sauce. Yeah, at the moment, because you just have your tea.
I'm actually pretty good at names, so I'll throw some in.
You should.
But you're with this Andrew chap who's a former guy who's pretty good with
what's
his name? Andrew.
Andrew White.
Andrew White. So he's been in the ads industry.
No, Andrew. Andrew is the best. He's been. We've worked with him. I think since we got there, 2017. We've been there for, actually, oh wow, why do I feel old now? We've been there for a minute. Yeah, so we've been there for, I think, 2017, 2018, until now. And Village Creative is just the best space you want to be in. When you're sitting in the garden, you have these guys who have been in the creative industry for years. And again, what I've learned as well is that we are sometimes in a certain bubble. Yeah, from a tech point of view, where you can use buzzwords that people get. But then, I remember, when you go to Texas, we're in Israel now, and then you go and say you're procurement, no one got what the hell we were saying. No one understood what procurement was.
Mm.
But then that's a word that you're using to describe your industry. And it's the same thing also when you're trying to talk to clients, it's like, there's a certain lack of, where we're not nuanced enough. If you are living in a fully tech space where you're like JSON and this and whatever and all that, and API this, API that, and then when you have to talk to real human beings,
you have to get out of your bubble.
You have to get out of your bubble. But then
communicate with them.
What the village is people who are not in your bubble. They're in their own bubbles. Are they not yours?
Right, so you have to connect with them.
And then how do you connect with them then? Exactly.
I mean, we can go so many tangents here. So So let's kind of talk about like scale. You know, where are you guys at in terms of you started the company in 2020
is when, but then so we started the company as it was an offshoot of scale of our other company, Socialite. So it was a pet project, something we were doing just on the side. 2020 is when we finally registered it, but then we're not doing 100% on it, pandemic and all of that. But then we just registered it, and we actually did not intend to raise funds. We were to build it using the money we were making from their digital agency.
Right.
But then the pandemic killed our digital agency side of the business almost in its entirety. That's why we chose to actually start raising money. And that's how we ended up in Texas in from March until July of 2022. So that's the first amount we raised, $120,000. And with that, we were able to pivot to be able to include now to fast to move towards fully private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And then... and then, yeah, so to create the marketplace of sorts.
Right.
And then last year is when we started raising our round. We are looking at $250,000. But then out of that, we've gotten three investors. Renew Capital just came in December. We got, in July, we got Kaleo Ventures, Kaleo VC, and we got Niban. But Niban is actually quite critical for us as an entity because it's angel.
For sure.
Yeah. And these are guys who in their own industries understand what the problem is because they are manufacturers.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They are people who deal with procurement on the day to day. They understand it from a manufacturing point of view, from a finance point of view, from access point of view and all of that, and from inclusion also point of view. So the biggest validation we got was actually from Niban when we had to meet people who actually experienced this.
Yeah.
And they were like, you know what? I'm going to put my money in that.
Yeah, that's really dope. Yeah. I mean, you can't get more validation than that.
Exactly.
Who's in the industry you're building for and into, and they actually say, yeah, I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why we are looking to actually build a similar solution, local capital.
Yeah.
We're calling it local capital. And I think it's a big deal, right?
It is.
Part of the problem we have with startups who have been well capitalized, not making it is because of the disconnect between where the money comes from. It has different expectations of reality on the ground. It's not. Yeah. It can't be supportive because they don't have the network. They don't understand how things work here. It's just disconnected, right?
It is a big one.
And so having local capital is so important. And also local VCs, right? People who can support that process, who can do bring more than money, even just understanding you and empowering you.
I think the education component, especially to old money, is important.
It's very important. Yeah.
I remember talking to someone and he's like, yes, I'll give you money, but I want 50%. And you're like,
it's ridiculous.
No one understands this space. And how then also are you able to teach them that this is not, what do you call it? Because it feels it's... When you talk to old money that is existing, they don't understand the investment world.
They don't, yeah. Especially in this sector. Look, I think we are at the emergence of our ecosystem.
Yeah.
The energy, the talent, the opportunity that's in front of what you guys are building is so much space for people to connect the digital tissue between. Within sectors, within industries, across, right? There's so much opportunity to be had.
Yeah.
So with all those challenges represent opportunity.
They do.
Right?
Oh, I love them.
Right? It's awesome. So we're in a great time. And just in the interest of time, give us a sense of what are the key KPIs you measure for your business? How do you measure, what do you measure and what's your business model? How do you make money?
We make money from suppliers who are responding to bids, and how we have improved on that based on our learnings before is that let suppliers pay for opportunities they think they can win.
Win. Okay. So it's almost like a bidding.
Yes.
Right.
Is I don't charge you to access opportunities. Yeah.
But to respond.
To respond to.
And what's a, what's a?
We are charging 500 shillings for every bid response.
Okay.
On the buyer side, for use of the platform, again, terms and conditions apply, is we're doing 53,000 shillings annual subscription.
Nice.
Yeah. But then even for any organization, because what we believe primarily is any company that buys also supplies something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So at any one point where you need to buy, it doesn't matter. We have a pay-as-you-go platform. So now if you're looking at the best prices, if you're looking at market discovery, you can actually just come use the platform one time. Yeah, get the best prices, award, get your business going. And then after that, if you need to use it in 3 months, 6 months, whatnot, so the pay-as-you-go pricing at 1,000 shillings for every bid that you publish.
Very flexible.
It is. And then procurement has to be, needs to be inclusive.
Right.
It needs to be accessible.
Right.
And there's always this idea that around procurement, probably again because of the solutions that are currently there, it's too expensive. It's been priced out of the reach of most companies in the country.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But then what we want to do is any company deserves a fair shot.
Right.
Yeah.
At getting the best vendors and at becoming and a, getting access to
exactly
giving the services. Yeah.
Desires a fair shot. And that's what we want to do, is just to make it as a fair game, accessible. You can utilize it at any point. It's on your phone and whatnot. But then beyond that, what you want to do, because we have been like, we are solving the biggest pain we face.
Mm.
And that also, that is supply chain financing.
Yeah? Okay.
Because now, when you look at all of this, and again, trust is a big part of it.
Right.
Banks right now cannot risk to give SMEs financing.
Right.
That's why the SME financing gap right now is $331 billion in sub-Saharan Africa. In Kenya, upwards of $20 billion annually. Yeah, that's the money that SMEs need that banks are not willing to finance.
Right.
So to what extent can we build these trust levels that can say that,
that can
be able to de-risk lending?
Yep, fantastic, yeah. Fantastic.
And we want to be lenders eventually, yeah.
Yep, makes total sense.
Yeah.
That reputation comes in, track record, all
precisely.
That
stuff. Yeah.
I love it, man. Yeah. So in terms of like where you're going, if we could just kind of wrap up with that,
yeah.
And then we can do a rapid fire set of questions here. Yeah. What does success look like when you look into the future for scale?
Success means for me that you want to open an office in Ghana, yeah, and you don't need to call your uncle's best friend from Ghana to say, "Do you know these guys?" How can I trust someone in Ghana if I want to trade with them without having to call the police? Yeah. Can I just do business easy because I know enough people in Ghana who trust that company?
Yeah.
Can I do business in Malawi without having to fly to Malawi?
Yeah, it's this idea of the it slips my mind right now, but it's like playing a game, you know, like business life is playing a game.
Mm.
So the infinite game, playing infinite games.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
And yeah, I think what you're doing is so important. And I can completely see the opportunity and what it will mean for productivity and goodwill, actually.
Yes,
right?
Goodwill. We are building goodwill.
Yeah, yeah. And trust, very, very important. Yeah. So let's kind of finalize here with a rapid fire set of questions. I'll just say a word, and you can respond to the first thing that comes to mind.
Uh-huh.
And
I'm terrible at this, but go on.
So we'll just give it a shot. Entrepreneurship.
Try.
Nice. Africa.
Must.
I've never had that one before. 2030.
Sorry, I don't have a word.
You can have a sentence, a phrase.
Yeah, it's... I've worked with the Vision 2030, the team around there, and to be honest, I'm actually worried about it in that, even though I don't know it, yeah? And I think, so the word for me then, as I'm rationalizing it, is tangible.
Back then, and now?
No, any vision should be tangible. At least I'll give someone the ability to feel they can grasp at it.
It's yeah, tangible is a word. Right? Yeah. Well, I mean, look, if they were, they're not, who's the they at the end of the day? It's you and me.
It is, but then I speak government.
Listen, I just came to realize when I sit across people like you who are doing what you're doing, that for me is the vision, right? You've got your hands on the levers that can make it tangible, because if you are successful, scale is successful. Think about what that is.
Yeah.
That is kind of like what they can do, but we can contribute to that.
To be honest, is why I couldn't even join government. I want a certain level of control, but also a certain level of impact. It's
no doubt.
I don't know, like, it affects me so much.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
It means so much to me that we can do something.
Well,
yeah.
You've got the opportunity with scale.
We'll take the best about it.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to be here.
No, I'm happy to be here.
And I'm excited about what you're doing, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks. Chinyamaji family. Thanks for joining us. We will keep the ball rolling. This time, we won't let you down. We'll keep having amazing guests like Mr. Tumbo here on the podcast. So until next time, have a good one.